You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. The best radio we do is the commentary that goes on behind the scenes during the commercial breaks. I can guarantee you that. Saturday, June, I wish it was January 29th, but it's June 29th. If it was January, it wouldn't be so dead-gum miserable outside. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, the Political Cesspool. We're everywhere. We're on AM, FM, satellite, internet, all the places the SPLC doesn't want us to be. That's all you need to know. We got to save time, so I can't give you the full normal intro tonight for this third hour. But we're going to talk this hour about two other rulings that the Supreme Court handed down this week, and then we're going to end the show with something a little more positive. A rare moment of levity here on the Political Cesspool. But Keith, first back to you.
Okay, let me get back to Bill's comments. Getting back to your question, back during the Civil Rights Movement, was it perceived by anyone on the right that things would go as far as they have? I'd have to say no, just because I don't believe anyone that wasn't under lock and key would have predicted the push for homosexual marriage and homosexual rights. That is pure evil, and I think that the Southern segregationists gave the left more credit than that, credit they obviously didn't deserve, as I pointed out in my comments about the movie Pillow Talk. Transgenderism was actually on their template then. We didn't know it. They were softening us up. I invite you to look at that movie and look at those episodes, at those little vignettes about the gynecologist's office, and tell me if it doesn't fit in with this. But I can tell you this. The Civil Rights Movement was the camel's nose in the tent, Bill. It was, you know, the Arabs say don't let the camel's nose in the tent, because if you let so much as the nose of the camel in the tent, the next thing you know, the camel's moved into the tent and you've been moved out of the tent. Like all good poker players, they led with their strongest suit, with their strongest card, with their strongest argument, with their strongest radical egalitarian project. The Civil Rights Movement, like all that have followed it, every other liberal project, was a radical egalitarian movement. Blacks are the same as or just as good as whites. What was the second great radical egalitarian movement of the Warren Court? Criminal rights. Escobedo versus Arizona, Miranda versus Arizona, Gideon versus Wainwright. Criminals are the same as or just as good as law-abiding citizens. And furthermore, any good Marxist will tell you that criminals serve a very valid social function by destabilizing bourgeois society, and they did not want them hampered in performing this mission. That's why we had the criminal rights movement or revolution in America. Then you had radical feminism. Women are the same as or just as good as men. Then you had illegal alien rights. Illegal aliens are the same as or just as good as lawful citizens. Then you had the sexual revolution and the drug culture. Everything was based on destabilizing bourgeois society, destroying the nuclear family, and also hampering the nuclear family, you know, that's the middle class. They wanted, you know, and then you have globalism. Plants and animals are the same as or just as good. I mean, you had environmentalism, radical environmentalism. Plants and animals are the same as or just as good as human beings. Then you have homosexual rights. Homosexuals are the same as or just as good as heterosexuals. Now, what's driving all this? I think that the John Birch Society was right back in the 50s when they used to say, beware of the one-worlders who think there is no reason why Americans should live any better than Ecuadorians. I remember that sign. These were the pencil-neck geeks with the big Adam's apples, the Buddy Holly horn-rimmed glasses, the white shirts with two front pockets, black trousers, black two-eyelet shoes, and white socks with a slide rule usually on their belt, that were the proponents and members of the John Birch Society back then. And I think they're absolutely right. Globalism is behind it. That's why you can't get either party to seriously consider building a border fence to protect America. They don't believe in national boundaries, so why would they build a fence that they hope will be obsolete in a few years? What will happen, for example, if we have globalism? Well, you'll have global elections. That's nothing but a cover for tyranny. If you think your vote doesn't count for much of anything in a federal election, think of how little it will count in a global election. They can tell you anything they want to, and it just gives them carte blanche to rule you tyrannically. Furthermore, in a nation like America now, we are free to wander from Point Barrow, Alaska to Key West, Florida, and settle and make our home anywhere we please. If globalism, if we have one world government, which is what they want, basically the only illegal aliens will be visitors from another planet. It will be all right for people to wander all over the globe from the North Pole to the South Pole, and what will happen, practically speaking, is that people from poorer areas will move to the more prosperous areas like Europe and America, and they will basically bring down society because, as we are fond of saying here on the Political Cesspool, you can't have a first world nation with a third world population. You can't have a first world community with a third world population. And the third worlders are being invited in, and we can't find anybody that will represent the majority opinion in America that this is wrong and we don't want immigrants. You know, that's in 1965, probably out of all of the civil rights legislation that took place throughout the last 60 or so years, the most damaging part in retrospect is the Immigration Act of 1965, sponsored by Son of Israel Emanuel Seller and Senator Ted Kennedy in the Senate. This has been the engine of real demographic change, and demography is destiny, and everything that liberalism is doing is being done for the purpose of basically eliminating the middle class, having a small group of elites, everyone else a poor proletariat. Agenda 21, they want you to live in a storage shed and ride a bicycle. That's the way it's supposed to be. They're trying to depopulate rural areas, move everybody into cities where you can live in a 500-square-foot shoebox in a high-rise building. This is the end game of it, folks. If you want to know where it's trending, see, I don't think the senators that signed the Southern Manifesto knew it, but we are now far enough down the road that we can tell what the end game is. The end game will be for the white race, South Africa and Zimbabwe. For the rest of the world, it is going to be what we've talked about, the globalist nightmare of Agenda 21.
All right, Keith, when we come back, and I know we're heavy on a break right now, we're going to have one segment to cover two Supreme Court rulings. Supreme Court's been busy in their deconstruction of the American society in the last month. The Voting Rights Act, the update on that, and another case involving affirmative action. And then the last two segments, we're going to talk about the modern-day definition of racism. It's all coming up, folks. Stay tuned.
Hi, folks. It's Sam Bushman, host of the Liberty Roundtable Live radio talk show at libertyroundtable.com. Hey, I just discovered something that I want to let you in on. Are you familiar with the Get Prepared Preparedness Expo at usapreparers.com, put on by Vince Finelli and crew? I'm telling you right now, it's a who's who of the preparedness world. With a preparedness show, along with a SHOT show, all rolled into one. It's going to be an incredible event when? July 19th, 20th, and 21st. Where? Lebanon, Missouri. Who? Well, me. I'm going to be there. Sam Bushman. I'm going to deliver my presentation, New Media Takes Center Stage. Who else? You. I'd like to invite you to personally attend and meet me and the other talk show hosts who will be in attendance. With over 100 instructors on all kinds of preparedness items, you just can't miss it. $18 for all 3 days online at usapreparers.com or $10 a day at the door. I'm going to be there. I hope to see you there. usapreparers.com.
Ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. That number again, 801-216-4816.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
We're starting to run out of time. It's been a fast and furious night in the cesspool. Never enough time. I mean, we could never get... We have 3 hours a week to... deal with the sewage that's been flushed our way from the mainstream media for the last 7 days. I mean, our 3 hours a week can hardly combat that inundation, but we do the best we can with the time we've got, and we try to give you a comprehensive breakdown, our unique opinion and analysis from a pro-white, dare I say, point of view. And I guess more importantly of all, I mean, you can certainly have... whites can be liberals, too. Those aren't our kind of white people, unfortunately. So we do it from a conservative point of view, a true paleo-conservative point of view, most importantly. A populist point of view. All right, Keith, you got one segment to break down two major stories. We spent an hour and a half, it seems, talking about DOMA. But there were two other significant rulings handed down by SCOTUS. The Voting Rights Act, they revisited that. What happened? What's your take on it? 3 minutes, and then we're going to go to affirmative action.
That's the Fisher versus State of Texas case. This arose because George W. Bush, the race traitor that he is, decided that he had to push along affirmative action in the Texas university system, despite the fact that it was put under special scrutiny under the Grutter and the Grutter versus Bollinger case back in 2003. The way he did it was, the top 10% of the graduating class of every high school in Texas was automatically admitted to the University of Texas, whether they went to the most exclusive, highly ranked academic prep school in Texas or in the lowest ghetto school. Actual objective measurements of academic achievement and intellectual capability, like the ACT and the SAT, were thus made irrelevant. And they could get in all the minorities that they wanted to. Abigail Fisher was unable to get into the University of Texas under that regimen, despite the fact that she was a stellar student and had excellent grades, excellent ACT scores, excellent SAT scores, so she brought suit. Now, what the Supreme Court did was kick the can down the road further. They sent the decision back to the lower court, the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, asked them to make inquiries as to whether the state of Texas had done everything that they could to make sure that race alone was not a deciding factor, okay? Now, this is just basically a decision not to disturb the status quo that George W. Bush had set in place. What is actually happening here, if we can back up and see the forest for the trees, is that the elite class in America does not want to stop discriminating invidiously on a racial basis against white students and prospective students, because they know that without affirmative action, they cannot get non-white minority, particularly blacks and Hispanics, into selective universities. They're not going to have any problem at all getting Jews and Asians into selective universities. In fact, those two categories, Asians are 5% of the population, Jews 1.7%, they make up over 53% of the student population of truly elite colleges like Harvard and Yale. Now, the University of Texas isn't on a par with that, but it's pretty close. And if you go to Austin, Texas, to the flagship branch of the University of Texas, you will see a predominance of not these long, tall Texans that we've been led to believe are the exclusive residents of Texas, according to movies like Pillow Talk, for example, that we were mentioning earlier. Instead, you will see a predominance of Asians. Asians and Jews are the minorities that are squeezing out white Gentiles in those colleges, but they also want to make sure that they have a critical mass of blacks and Hispanics. They call these elite schools the breeding stables of America's elite, and they indeed are. And if they are the breeding stables of America's elite, the elites currently in power, particularly those on the Supreme Court, have let us know who will be ruling America in the 21st century and who will be on the outside looking in. The founding stock of America will be on the outside looking in. It's no longer our country. Our elites have sold us out, even the elites that are of the same racial stock as us. And, for example, in this Supreme Court, the founding stock is not represented. We have three Jews and six Catholics, no Protestants, and we have four of the five boroughs of New York City represented on the court, but we have no Americans from the interior of America. Everybody is from a coastal state, either on the left coast or the east coast, that is sitting on the Supreme Court now. We have been effectively disenfranchised, cordoned off from the real power. That's what the Fisher case stands for. They're basically shoving a thumb in your eye and saying, you're on the outside looking in. We don't care about being fair. We lied to you in the Civil Rights Movement. In the Civil Rights Movement, they said they were going to end racial discrimination. Instead, they have decided to replace one type of racial discrimination with another. That's all they're doing. They used to discriminate against black people. Now they discriminate against white people. And they have no intention of changing that regimen. Whatever happened to all that palaver we keep hearing incessantly from Sean Hannity about judging people by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin? Now let's move on to the next one, Jim.
Well, time is fleeting. So when we come back, and we've got a couple of minutes till break, Keith, so you had to tread water. No, for the first time in your life, you ended early. But in the next segment, we're going to shift gears, and we've been spending a fairly significant portion of the show tonight talking about three important Supreme Court rulings, all of which we lost on, but nothing's new there. Voting Rights Act we didn't lose on per se, but I mean, you know, it's an antiquated law anyway, because we've transitioned from the point where blacks were striving for equal rights to the point where the law of the land now is anti-white discrimination. So why would they need an antiquated law saying blacks get to vote or so on and so forth? Because we've moved way beyond that. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the modern day definition of racism. But first, Keith, I know you want a final word.
Okay, the Voting Rights Act was Shelby County, as in Shelby County, Tennessee, where Memphis is located, in other words, our home turf, versus Holder, that being Eric Holder, the Attorney General in charge of the Justice Department. This was a challenge to one provision of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which required all ex-Confederate states, basically, and a few other locales selected In other words, it was a bill of attainder. It should never have been passed into law in the first place because it treats different parts of America differently. But basically, places that they suspected of being nasty old segregationists had to have any change in their voting boundaries, voting districts, voting laws pre-certified by the Justice Department before they could go into law. In effect, what that meant in a place like Tennessee, for example, was that every 10 years, the state legislature gets to reapportion the state legislature and who gets, what the districts are. Whenever the Democrats were in charge at that 10-year interval, they got to do exactly as they pleased. They would gerrymander to their heart's content to maximize Democratic representation. But when the Republicans won, they never got to follow suit. They couldn't do the same as the other side because they had to go to the Justice Department, and particularly under the Obama administration, what the Justice Department did was promptly turn the matter over to the local branch of the NAACP to get them to do the gerrymandering and then say, no, we're not going to approve your gerrymander. Here's a gerrymander we will approve. And it, like, lo and behold, it's the same gerrymander you would have gotten had the Democrats been in power. So basically, it was disenfranchising the Republicans and the whites, and they said that was unconstitutional, but that was a sop. That was the least thing they could do to the conservatives after shutting them out on DOMA and on affirmative action.
What is a racist? Are you a racist? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Ba, 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 ba.
welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Shifting gears now here. I want to play a clip for you now from a gentleman from London, England, Great Britain, by the name of Paul Weston. And Paul Weston admits to the fact that he is, in fact, a racist. He doesn't dispute it. He doesn't deny it. In fact, he embraces it because he understands, as we do, that the definition of the word racist has shifted considerably in modern parlance over the course of the last few decades. And so he says, yes, listen, you know, there's no reason in even combating it anymore. The definition has been altered so by the dramatically. And so by the modern day definition of the word, we are in fact racist, and it's time to admit it and move forward with our good work. I want to play for you in its entirety, and it's a 7-minute clip, what Paul Weston had to say about the matter, and then Keith and I are going to offer our response to it before the time runs out this evening. Let's go straight to the clip.
Hello, my name is Paul Weston, and I am a racist. I know I'm a racist because I'm told I'm a racist by a great deal of people. The hard left think I'm a racist. The Labour Party thinks I'm a racist. Conservatives think I'm a racist. Liberal Democrats think I'm a racist. The BBC thinks I'm a racist. So I must therefore be a racist. Why am I a racist? It's very simple. I wish to preserve the culture of my country. I wish to preserve the people of my country. And in doing so, that makes me a designated racist in today's society. Now, this is something that's been moved by the left. The goalposts have been moved by the left a considerable distance on this. In order to be termed a racist 30 or 40 years ago, you had to actively dislike foreign people. Now, I don't dislike foreign people. What I do like, what I love, is my country, my culture, and my people. And I see that under a terrible threat at the moment. Britain is a very small country that's opened its doors to the mass immigrants of the third world, and we are simply being overwhelmed. Our schools can't cope, our hospitals can't cope, very little can cope anymore. Our welfare system is on the verge of buckling as well. So if I want to defend what I grew up in, what I was born into, my country, my British culture, my heritage and my history, I am, apparently, according to absolutely everybody today, a racist. But I don't think that's the case. Not the case that I'm not actually a racist. I'm going to admit that full out right now, because clearly I am. I've been told by so many people I am, it simply must be true. I'm probably also an Islamophobe. A phobia is an irrational fear of something. Now, I don't have an irrational fear of Islam. I look around the world today, at Syria at the moment, where almost 100,000 people have been killed in the last 2 years, where Shia Muslims are slaughtering Sunni Muslims and vice versa. I look at places like Indonesia and Egypt and China and the Philippines. Everywhere you look, you see problems with Islam, and they're violent. They are, dare I say it, to really reinforce my racist credentials, a thoroughly savage political and religious ideology. Now, many people will disagree with that. The far left, of course, will say you cannot criticize Islam because Islam is a religion and rules have now been put into place in this country that say if you criticize it, you are guilty of inciting religious hatred. But Islam is not just a religion. Islam is a political ideology as well, and we need to call it out on the fact that it is also political. It is a culture that is both political and religious. And I would like to know if I'm able to say certain things about it. Do I think, for example, that stoning adulteresses to death is something that we should welcome in this country? Well, I don't think it is, so therefore I'm guilty of religious hatred by saying it. Do I think homosexuals should be hanged from cranes? No, I don't. I think it's backward, I think it's savage, and I think the people that do it are beyond the pale, quite frankly. And I'm not allowed to say these things because, of course, I'm again inciting religious hatred. So not only am I a racist, I'm also a religionist, apparently. But I'm not. You know, we have a huge problem in this country that is not going to go away. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. We as a people are declining as a demographic, and the Islamic population is growing 9 times faster than any other. And when I look to the future, I see a full-blown religious civil war occurring in this country. The unthinkable things that are going on in somewhere like Syria today will happen in this country before 2040, certainly before 2050. And I don't want Britain to turn into a country like that. So I'm going to denounce Islam as a backward, savage, political and religious ideology, and to hell with what anybody thinks about that. Because if we don't do something about it, we are going to be involved in something that most people can barely even begin to imagine in Britain. Babies are beheaded in towns in Syria. The idea this could happen in somewhere like Surbiton or even Eaton Square is simply impossible to think for most people, but it is going to happen. It really is going to happen. So we need to denounce it for what it is, and we need to start mounting some sort of defense against this. But the trouble with mounting a defense against it is that you get hit with the racist accusation. I'm not a racist, but. Well, here's the thing. I am a racist. If I want to avoid a civil war happening in my country, I am prepared to accept being called a racist. And you should be prepared to accept being called a racist as well. Let's all just say, yes, we're dreadful, dreadful racists, and let's start denouncing an ideology that is the most primitive, backward, savage ideology that we've willfully imported into this country by the left, by people like Tony Blair, who did it deliberately in order to undermine our culture, our people, our country, my country. They did it deliberately. And then they said, you're not allowed to actually argue with us about this. Well, I'm arguing with you about this, Mr. Blair, and I'll tell you something. You denounced, you repealed the treason law shortly after you came into power. I think you committed treason, Mr. Blair. I think you committed treason when you said we are going to import the third world in order to rub the noses of the right in diversity. To me, that's treason. Your principal duty is to uphold the best interests of the people of this country. The idea that you deliberately set out to undermine us and to subvert us is an act that's criminal. It doesn't matter that you repealed the laws. Those laws can be brought back. And one day, Mr. Blair, you will be tried for treason, along with the rest of your cabinet and every single high-ranking Labour politician that allowed this criminal act to happen. And I'm going to tell you this. It doesn't matter that you can perhaps prosecute me for racism or inciting religious hatred. I don't believe in that. I believe only in one thing, the defence of my country, the defence of my people, the defence of my culture. And everything else can just go to hell. I am a racist.
Ladies and gentlemen, truly one of the most incredible commentaries I have ever heard. Ever heard. And you know what? More and more people are beginning to see the R word for what it is. This guy, the latest of which, and he's the one of the primary spokesmen of the Liberty Great Britain, a movement that seeks to put Great Britain first. You could have taken his commentary and alternated Great Britain for America, and you would have gotten the exact same story, because what's happening there is happening here. Their problems are real. Our problems are real. I wrote Racism Schmacism in 2010 to try to defang and deconstruct the socio-political nuclear bomb that is the R word. And in my closing statement, I said, you know, when someone calls you a racist, as I've been called so many times I can't even keep count, you just laugh at them and disregard it and move forward. Well, I think Paul Weston, 3 years later, has improved upon my theory. You know, in 2004, when the Political Cesspool first went on the air, I think we were the only people speaking out and embracing the carnage that was to befall us. But now, more than ever, over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, I'm seeing more and more people and media entities like WorldNet Daily moving forward, denunciations and baseless name calling be damned. And I'm not going to say that we are the reason for all of this. I'm going to say that without question, the political cesspool has played a role in the fact that more people are coming around to our way of thinking. But what you just heard from Paul Weston was absolutely incredible. If everyone would embrace and adopt his thinking, we could turn this thing around tomorrow. We're going to let Keith comment on it right after this.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
If you want to experience the great outdoors in comfort and style, then you need products from Teton Sports. For any of your camping, hiking, or outdoor needs, Teton Sports has top-of-the-line products for any adventure. Our sturdy and lightweight Wilderness 55 backpack has a built-in rainfly and plenty of compartments and pockets, perfect for hiking the mountains or a weekend camping trip. And our zero-degree sleeping bag features Superloft Elite 4-channel hollow fiber insulation for warmth, as well as right and left side zippers to let you zip 2 Teton bags together. With an adjustable mummy hood and interior storage pockets, our sleeping bags are the best on the market. Teton Sports is all you need for any outdoor adventure. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman Warehouse, or Wholesale Sports. And next time you're preparing for an adventure, think of Teton Sports.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well, just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. FreezeDryGuy.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, I'll tell you, Keith, at least our own staff is enjoying the show tonight. Art Frith, the Lord of the Board, our producer, excited about the show, really excited about that Paul Weston clip, and I just emailed it to him at his own... All right, Eddie called you during the break. He text messaged me. He said, best show y'all have done in a long time, hitting the nail on the head. Even Eddie's wife is with us tonight, so thank you, Brenda, and thank you, Pappy. So I'm glad that we're... I'm glad that our own staff is enjoying the show tonight. Hopefully other people are as well. We love you, Eddie. We love you, Art. And glad Eddie is on the mend and listening to the show from the comfort of his home tonight. Yeah, we don't want him to rupture his surgical incision listening to the show tonight, but it is pretty exciting stuff. So, now, as we said, the last couple of minutes of the show tonight, before we go into the bumper outro music, we're going to play a Four Seasons song. Why? Well, number one, because it's my show and I do what I want to do. But number two, it's going to completely overshadow anything we might have done tonight in terms of just sheer brilliance and enjoyment. But first, Keith, you listened to that clip as the rest of the audience did as we played it in its entirety, all 7 minutes and 27 seconds. It's also available for anyone who wants to listen to it again or perhaps share with friends at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We posted it this week. Paul Weston's commentary, as I said before the break, I think more and more people are beginning to see these character assassinations for what they are. We've been subjected to them since day one. Not because we hate anyone, but because we love and want to preserve our own culture the same way that everybody else should and ought to want to do. Unlike everyone else, though, we do get called racist and Nazis and bigots and xenophobes and so on and so forth because we believe that our people have a right to exist, that our culture should have a country of its own to thrive and flourish. Of course, that's racist. We've never let that stop us, God knows. But it is something, it is a cross that we have to bear. Our audience makes the suffering easier with their support, both prayerful and otherwise. But I'm seeing, Keith, to cut to the chase, more and more people like Paul Weston step up and say, you know what, enough's enough. And I'm not going to say the political cesspool influenced Paul Weston. It's probable that he's never even heard us. But a lot of people do hear us, and a lot of people do listen to this show, and a lot of people are adopting that stance. And I think without question, the role that the political cesspool has played in popular discourse over the course of the last 9 years, thanks entirely to the support we've received from our audience. We couldn't do anything without the support from our listeners. But I do think we're having an effect, and the snowball is rolling, and more people are getting on board. And, there is still hope. Hope is a powerful thing. And even in these dark days where the media celebrates sodomy and condemns people like Tim Tebow, even in these dark days, I still maintain hope because people like us still exist, and we get the emails from them every day. They're out there, and they're not going to be silenced, and they are supporting us, and there's people like Paul Weston out there. Keith, what did you think of what he had to say?
I thought it was great. Let me say this, that it's not exactly the same thing in America. We aren't being inundated with Muslims the way that they are in England. We're being inundated with Hispanics. But it's the same darn thing, okay? What they're doing is they're inundating both nations with the easiest, most available group of third worlders, people that do not share a first world outlook, do not share our religion, do not share our culture or customs. And furthermore, they are allowed to immigrate when they have no intention of assimilating. In fact, a lot of them arrive at the shores of England or America wanting to assimilate. But they're promptly taught that that's cultural imperialism on our part, that they should not assimilate. We no longer have the melting pot in America. We have the salad bowl. Apparently, they have the same salad bowl model for new immigrants in England that they have in America. They insist on keeping all of their old customs and converting us to those customs, and they get the power of the legal system behind them because the elites give it to them, as the elites just did in 2 out of 3 important Supreme Court decisions last week. They basically are an engine to bludgeon white America with and to raise up all non-white segments of America. And like I said, the Immigration Act of 65, which allowed non-traditional immigrants to get to the front of the line for immigration to America, they are now having the desired effect. They are going to swamp us at the ballot box. And when they do, Katie, bar the door. That's what Paul Weston is complaining about in England. They're inundating them with these people who are more than willing to pick up stakes and leave a third world hellhole in order to go to a first world nation run by white people, which, unlike first world nations run by non-whites like Japan, Korea, Dubai, Kuwait, Israel, all of those places have the most restrictive immigration policies in the world, but we are benevolent to people that come in from the outside. We have a long tradition of doing that, and they take advantage of our goodwill and our as a weakness. You know, it was Oscar Wilde, the English playwright in the 19th century, who famously said, "In the real world, goodness isn't rewarded and evil isn't punished. Instead, victory goes to the strong and defeat is thrust upon the weak." All of these other groups see our goodness and our altruism as a form or a species of weakness. And it is when you're dealing with these people. You have to play the game by their rules. You can't fight the culture war with one arm tied behind your back. That's what Mr. Weston is basically saying. What he's saying is that every other group besides white Gentiles is not only allowed but encouraged to have a strong sense of racial solidarity. And they're also encouraged to have a strong sense of their group interests and the right to lobby the government on their behalf. Everybody except us, we're going to have to deny that type of reasoning and insist. See, that's a weird type of white supremacy. If you ask a liberal why we can't do it and everybody else can, they'll say, because we're better. Well, we're not better. That's white supremacy. We're white egalitarians. We say we need the same rights as everyone else. They call that racism. I call that egalitarianism.
Keith, one final point, then we're going to get to a song if Sam has it queued up. We're going to end this show on a good note. But could you imagine, first of all, let me ask you to compare and contrast Paul Weston's response to the allegations of racism vis-a-vis Paula Deen's response to the allegations of racism. Could you imagine if Paula Deen had responded like him, when she was charged with racism, the way she could have turned the media on its head. But of course she didn't. You got 30 seconds, then we got to go.
What it's like, what Paula Deen is like a Stalinist show trial in the 30s, where they brought accused reactionaries and backward thinkers before the tribunal, and they tried to get their way out, weasel their way out by confessing to all sorts of imaginary sins, but they went to the firing squad or the gulags anyway. Paula Deen is going there. Paul Weston, God bless him, hopefully will survive, and people like him. You got to fight back. You can't go with the flow.
And what do we want to do here, folks? What are we asking for? We're asking to hang on. Let's hang on to our culture. Let's hang on to our identity. Let's hang on to our heritage. Let's hang on. And let's hang on to this song right now. Let's go with it. Good night, everybody.